and welcome to episode 8 of Science Chat. My name is Sean Marshall. Well, it's 2010, and after an unseasonably long break, partly sponsored by some of the worst weather Ireland has seen for decades, we're back with our science communication podcast, and we're starting off with climate change. Climate change and global warming are issues that are widely reported, and no more so than with the recent Copenhagen conference. To discuss this, I recently spoke to Professor Colin O'Dowd, Director of the Centre for Climate and Air Pollution Studies in the Environmental Change Institute in the National University of Ireland, Galway. And I started by asking what exactly the Environmental Change Institute does.
The Environmental Change Institute in NUI Galway is an umbrella research institute which focuses on environment and climate change. It has four thematic areas, one being climate change, one being biodiversity, the third being energy, and the fourth being environment and health. Under these thematic areas, there are two research centres. One is the Centre for Climate and Air Pollution Studies, which I'm the director of, and the other is the Energy Research Centre. Within the Centre for Climate and Air Pollution Studies, there are a number of areas, some elements of research, but the main area of focus is atmospheric composition, air pollution, and its interaction with climate change. We do a number of methodologies under these sections. One is monitoring of atmospheric composition, and we do that at our Maesteg Atmospheric Research Station on the Connemara coast, where we have been monitoring greenhouse gases like CO2, ozone, which is not only a greenhouse gas, but it's an air pollutant as well. We've been monitoring the CFCs, and this data record has been underway since nearly 20 years. The station itself was founded in the late 50s. We had the 50th anniversary of this a couple of years ago, and while this research has been intermittent in the early decades, for the past two decades, we've had a very good continuous data set. Not only do we do monitoring of the greenhouse gases and CFCs, we also monitor atmospheric aerosols. These are tiny airborne particles which produce haze and cloud layers. To complement the monitoring program, we also have an active research-driven program as opposed to a monitoring program. The research looks at key processes of pollutants, both natural and anthropogenic, in the atmosphere. We look at atmospheric chemistry, aerosol formation, aerosol interaction with clouds, precipitation, and a whole range of meteorological profiles. At the moment, I would probably say Maesteg is one of the most advanced stations of its kind in the world, with a very elaborate meteorological measurement program, cloud radars, atmospheric profilers, a very advanced aerosol measurement program with advanced instruments like aerosomats, spectrometers. The gas phase measurements of greenhouse gases and CFCs are really state of the art. The station is an important station in the WMO Global Atmosphere Watch program, which monitors background levels of pollutants all across the globe. In addition to the measurement program, we have a regional climate modeling program where we have implemented climate models with atmospheric composition. The atmospheric composition in climate models is driving the global change. In particular, we have atmospheric chemistry modules and atmospheric aerosol modules and aerosol cloud interaction modules, and this represents a major step forward in region climate modeling compared to standard region climate models, which only deal with meteorological parameters. So in a nutshell, that's what our monitoring research and modeling activities are about in the Center for Air Pollution Climate Change.
And with all of this data, it's of course important how it's presented and communicated. So what do you think are the difficulties in communicating the details about climate change to the public?
Well, you can generate any level of complexity in the data which one wants, but the critical issue is the fundamentals of climate change, and particularly global warming, with a focus on greenhouse gases. That is really quite straightforward. It's about the trapping of re-emitted long wave radiation by a greenhouse gas layer, which returns some of the radiation back to the Earth. It's like a duvet effect. The scientists really have to keep the message simple for both the public and the policy makers, because if it gets too complex, it's maybe not the most efficient way of communication. One of the major problems with the concept of global warming is it's difficult to translate into regional climate change. And regional climate change can be very diverse depending on which region you live in. For example, it's not uncommon to think that with global warming we would get nice warmer temperatures in Ireland and have a climate like the south of France. But such basic assumptions, since it would be a mistake. The message we really have to get across is there would be more, most likely there would be more extreme weather events, and it's the extreme weather events which cause the major damage. The regional consequences of global warming and regions scale, as I mentioned, are complex, and these are linked to global change in a complex manner. But the bottom line is the physics of global warming by greenhouse gases is still fairly rudimentary, and that message should be gotten across that it is anthropogenic CO2 emissions which are driving the increase in greenhouse gases, and this increase in greenhouse gases is what's driving the increase in temperatures. But then you have a challenge if you take last month as one of the coldest months in Europe in many decades, so it's natural to ask, why is this happening if we're having global warming? So one must very clearly delineate between natural variability overlaid on an increasingly changing climate trend. So again, on the scientists must make it clear that while there is variability in the climate, and there always will be, there are long-term trends which do result in long-term climate change. One additional problem is, maybe people look at the temperature records over the last 50 years, maybe skeptical people would say, why was their vertical temperature increase in between 1950 and 1980? And then the situation gets a little bit more complex. But again, there's a simple answer. There was a lot of air pollution, a lot of atmospheric aerosol particles, which through the production of haze and cloud layers, they blocked out more incumbents and solar radiation than the compared to what one would have if you had maybe clean air. And this aerosol layer effect partially masked the true rate of global warming. But I think that over the next one or two decades, we're going to see the very opposite effect, because as the developed countries strive for cleaner air, this haze of cooling air would be taken away, and it would result in accelerated global warming. So I think the records will show very conclusively over the next maybe decade that really global warming is accelerating and is a major concern for everybody. In a nutshell, we have to be terribly clear about how we communicate to the public and what message we want to get across. And the message, simply from my opinion, is that our emissions of greenhouse gases are simply accumulating rapidly in the atmosphere, and this is evident at our Mayshead, in our Mayshead data set. And unless we reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases, we will be in a serious trouble, more particularly our next generations will be in even greater trouble.
And along with the challenge of communicating about global warming, then you get events like the recent email hacking incident at the Climatic Research Unit of the University of East Anglia and the subsequent leaks. Do you think that this has damaged the fight against global warming?
Very clearly, that event did some damage. However, I think this damage will be short-lived. I believe most rational scientists will understand it for what it was. I also believe that the majority of the public will also. The damage may be that it has maybe increased the number of skeptics somewhat, but maybe not too much. One should, well, any informed person should know that it's very difficult to get a large international a group of scientists to falsify something. Scientists are very competitive, and if something is very clearly wrong, or even if there is a suspicion of it being wrong, there will be numerous respected scientists to highlight this. In addition, most of this work and the previous work on the intergovernmental climate change process has been published in peer-reviewed journals. Now, I was editor of one of the leading geophysics journals worldwide, where a lot of this work was published. And personally, I oversaw the review and the decision-making process. All I can say is it was very robust, and the reviews were always very critical. So it was really very difficult for anything not scientifically sound to make it through the system. One must also realize what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is. It's a group of many thousands of scientists from maybe hundreds of countries, and most of these operate within government agencies, with a minority operating from universities. Now, the fact that they all agree on the issue of anthropogenic emissions leading to the current level of global warming is some achievement in itself, and it has actually taken years to get all these parties to agree on this issue. So the situation is not in the medium term, and certainly in the long term I don't think there will be such major damage from this hacking event.
Do you think there was a conspiracy at work over the timing of the leak, it being so close to Copenhagen?
Well, it's hard to say really, because I'm certainly not in the climate skeptic camp, but the timing was very interesting, and it was really optimal in the timing to give a maximum impact prior to the Copenhagen negotiations. One must realize in the climate skeptic community there are big interests at stake, so I can't really comment, but one always has to be reasonably suspect of the timing of these events.
How would you judge the outcome of Copenhagen? Would you consider it to have been positive, negative, or neutral?
Well, while not negative, it wasn't as positive as originally anticipated. The EU is ready to do a full deal in Copenhagen based on its long-term goal of temperature stabilization driven by long-term emissions reductions targets, and the deal would have included finance in support of adaptation, technology transfer and mitigation in developing countries. But unfortunately a number of the key players were not ready for such a deal. Mainly I guess the Americans really didn't show the colour of their money, and the major developing countries, the leading developing countries like China and India, maybe Brazil, wouldn't proceed till they got a clear financial commitment. Obviously there is a cost to adaptation. There's a lot of money at stake. The money will be mainly sourced from the EU and the US. So maybe given the current difficult financial times, it's maybe hard to make a commitment. But the other issue is the structure of the US system would require approval by the Senate, and maybe that is not possible within the time scale. On a positive note, a number of these advanced development countries have agreed to the Copenhagen Accord, and this is a very important step in its own right. Importantly, it includes recognition of the EU view that the global temperature increase should be kept below 2 degrees centigrade relative to the pre-industrial levels, and this provides key guidance on future emissions pathways. And the Accord also allowed parties to confirm their stated pledges on their commitments and actions that will put us on a global pathway to allow us to stay within the 2 degree target. So all in all, it was a very important step, despite a legal agreement not emerging. And I guess it's the main two key negotiation tracks, the Kyoto Protocol and the long-term cooperative action, which is established in Bali, will continue, and hopefully these will be concluded in Mexico later this year in November to form the basis of a legally binding outcome. So in a nutshell, maybe Copenhagen is not outcome, which was anticipated by many in the EU in particular, but also elsewhere. It has become a key event, has identified a series of issues which need to be resolved over the coming year. And it'll be up to Mexico and others to provide the roadmap to achieve this.
Well, I think everybody, except maybe the hardened skeptics, see the need for a reduction in carbon emissions. But do you think that there's a real willingness amongst the world leaders to combat global warming, with their minds still firmly fixed on the global recession?
It's hard to say, probably, but perhaps from a collective EU perspective, there seems to be a real willingness, although some member states may not react as progressively as others. But certainly, the EU is very highly motivated in this issue. The other big players, a real willingness seems to have been lacking, to be honest, and it remains to be seen how engaged the new US administration really is in particular. I think once the US really become engaged and make a commitment, major development countries will roll in. They'll be under a lot of pressure to roll in. Whether you view that as a commitment or a willingness or not, I'm not sure. As I mentioned, one difficulty is there's a massive economic cost to tackle the problem, particularly as there'll have to be massive money transfers from developed countries to developing countries. But one should also look at the other side of the coin. There are a lot of new technologies to be developed, and with these new technologies will come new economic landscapes. So there is a benefit. And new economies may emerge. The most vulnerable countries to the climate change impacts, maybe such as sea level rise, they are very committed, but these really tend to be much smaller nations that may even be wiped out in the near term because of imminent climate change. So it depends on maybe how removed you feel as a nation from the impact of climate change, how much your willingness is.
Okay, and on that note, thank you very much, Professor Rodell.
Thank you, Sean.
Well, that's it for this episode. The next episode is another brief foray into outreach and education. And I'm also working on securing an interview with Baroness Greenfield for a future episode. You can find Professor O'Dowd on www.nuigalway.ie/c-caps. That's www.nuigalway.ie/c-caps. As usual, I'm to be found on Twitter, hiding under my alter ego, AlphaPDent42, and also on my blog, www.sciencechat.net/wordpress.